Welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Odyssey Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. That's Chris Biederman. That's Chris Biederman. And he covers the 49ers, among a bunch of other things, for the paper of record in a West Coast capital city. And we are going to talk about the 49ers young core, or whatever it is we're calling it, and where the 49ers young core ranks among the NFL. And then also, I want to talk about non-quarterback MVP candidates on the 49ers, because I think that's a fun conversation. Before we do that, a big shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website. You can use code Candlestick20 for 20% off your order today. We love Lamb Chops, the official clothing brand of this podcast. Lamb Chops, join the herd. Okay, let's get into the 49ers group of young players, or lack thereof. Here we go.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
You know, I feel like we're going to talk a lot this season about young players, and I think that's just kind of the nature of having a roster where all of the best guys are well into their 30s. I shouldn't say well into their 30s, because Christian McCaffrey just turned 30, but all their best guys are 30 and over. And then seeing it put down in writing, because we've talked about that before. Like, you and I got into that, especially going into the draft, just the need to find, like, young blue chip talent, right? The future George Kittles and Fred Warners and the Debo Samuels. Like, where are those players? Because they really haven't found them. And we talked just last podcast about Talanoa Hufanga was the last All-Pro they drafted, and that was in 2021. But seeing it laid bare the way Aaron Schatz did it for ESPN, where he ranked the teams by their players who were younger than 25 years old. And the 49ers came in on that list ranked 27th, which honestly is kind of higher than I thought they would be. Just at first blush, if you had asked, I just knew I was scrolling to the bottom. But then when you look at the list, it's kind of bleak, man.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest criticism you could have of Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch as they've put this team together over the last few years. And, you know, we've talked about it. It's been talked about elsewhere. Like, you basically have three ways to build out a roster, three tools at your disposal: draft, free agency, and trade. I would say since the pandemic, basically, mm-hmm. It's been about free agency and trade, where the 49ers have really done a good job building out the roster, and the draft mm-hmm. has just been lacking, frankly. Like, they've been, you know, one of their best free agency moves in recent memory was Mac Jones last year, who basically mm-hmm. saved their season, right? And mm-hmm. you can talk about trades with Trent Williams and Christian McCaffrey, two of their best players.
Yep.
They haven't drafted any stars, to your point, in a long, long time. And even George Kittle and Fred Warner and Nick Bosa, like, all those guys are absolutely on the back nines of their career.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the thing that's going to define the long-term success of the 49ers is, can any of these young guys that they have develop into those all pro, Pro Bowl, however you want to say it, type guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like their last couple draft classes have been solid, but I think really what's going to be important for them, particularly given how good the NFC West is can some of these guys take that leap?
Right.
From, like, okay, this is like a young player who looks like he's going to be a starter, to, oh, this is a young player who looks like he's going to be a Pro Bowler.
Yes.
And that's ultimately going to be how they compete with the Rams and Seahawks.
Yeah, man. Just to go through this list real quick that ESPN put together. So Schatz had, or I should say Aaron Schatz put together. The 49ers are ranked 27th among NFL teams in terms of players on their roster who are under 25. Their one blue chip player, according to Aaron Schatz, is Mykel Williams. That's a run-stuffing defensive end who doesn't really rush the passer and is coming off an ACL tear. The other players on their defense, 24 and under, 24 and under, Malik Mustafa and Marquise Siegel, the two safeties, Upton Stout, Alfred Collins, all those players are 24 years old. And then Connor Colby and Carver Willis are 23 and 24 respectively and will be in the mix at left guard. Dejon Stribling, just 23. Kalen Black and Jordan James. Kalen Black is 24 years old. Jordan James from last year, 2022, is 22 years old. And then Romello Height, the 49ers rookie third round pick, is already aged out of the under 25 group. So of those players, Malik Mustafa, Marquis Siegel, Upton Stout, starters. Yes?
Yeah. We're calling Nickel in Upton Stout's case a starter.
Yeah. Nickel corner's the starter for me. Do we feel good about any of that trio ever making a Pro Bowl?
A Pro Bowl? I guess my de facto answer would be Stribling.
I haven't gotten to Stribling yet.
Oh, you haven't gotten
to Stribling yet? Just out of Mustafa, Siegel, and Stout.
Oh, no then. Like, maybe Stout.
Yeah.
I think I'm high.
If he takes a leap.
I think I'm highest on Stout among any of their young defensive players.
I'm right there with you.
Stout and Collins. Yeah. Again, maybe. I think Stout has a better chance based on what we saw after his rookie season, but I think Collins has the skill set and the physical traits to get there.
What about Mykel Williams?
So if Mykel, like, I've always judged Mykel Williams on the Eric Armstead scale. Like, if Mykel Williams is Eric Armstead, I think that's a success. But is that, like, did Eric Armstead make any Pro Bowls?
Might have made one.
Right. So if we're judging it on Pro Bowls, maybe not. But if we're judging success on, like, can he be what Eric Armstead was, then I think there's a pretty good chance that he can, which is Eric Armstead was a really good player for a decent amount of time.
Never made a Pro Bowl, but led the team in sacks in 2019.
Right. And had a lot of cleanup sacks.
Yeah.
But I would say, I mean, from that standpoint, maybe not. But I think the floor is really high for Mykel Williams, barring injury, of course.
Yeah, I'm with you for sure. And then you go to the offensive side, and I think I agree with you. I think Stout is the player who could really. We talked about the potential benefits of a better defensive line, a better linebacking core, like just better supporting. What's the word I'm looking for? Supporting cast. Supporting cast. Yeah, I almost said staff, which is not the word I was looking for. Support staff. Yeah, for Upton Stout. If you told me he had a few interceptions and was one of the darlings of social media film people, I wouldn't be shocked at all. But on the offensive side, it's Connor Colby, Carver Willis, Stribling, Kalen Black, and Jordan James. And just like, if one of Connor Colby or Carver Willis becomes a starter, I'd great. As far as them being Pro Bowlers, like, probably not. And then you look at Kalen Black and Jordan James. Jordan James couldn't get on the field as a rookie behind Christian McCaffrey. And then the Niners had to draft Black despite having James on their roster. Like, I just don't, I'm never going to bank on a 49ers running back while Christian McCaffrey is around. And they've got him at least for the next couple of years, which just sort of leaves Stribling. And I mean, you can be high on him, but I don't know that he's ever going to be one of the top 10 receivers in the sport the way peak Deebo Samuel was.
If Carver Willis turns, like, has the same career as Colt McKivitz, regardless of what position he ends up playing, you would view that as a success, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, and Colt McKivitz isn't going to make any Pro Bowls. So it's kind of like the point of the exercise is just overall quality, right? I think there's a chance for Willis. I mean, we haven't seen him play. He might be terrible. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say Stribling. I'm very interested to see what Stribling looks like his rookie season. And I'm curious if there's any validity to the thought that because he played at three different colleges, because he's used to transitioning to different offenses, because he's an older rookie Like, is he going to hit the ground running maybe more than we've seen from other rookies and in sure. Kyle Shanahan's offense because of those factors, right? Like, that's something mm-hmm. I'm interested in seeing. And I think there's a possibility. And I'm also curious what his role is going to be.
Yeah. Sure.
And is there going to be a vacuum for playing time because they don't trust Pearsall a ton, or is Christian Kirk going to be in and out of the lineup with injury? Is Mike Evans going to stay healthy? Like, there's potentially a vacuum of snaps available for Stribling.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he does adjust quickly, I think he could be a pretty important player for them. What do you think of the reporting that came out? I think it was Adam Schefter who said there were a lot of teams, including maybe the Rams, who thought Stribling was the best receiver in the draft.
It makes sense. It follows the track of some of the reporting that came out immediately after the draft, where you had guys like Albert Breer saying that he thought Tennessee might take him early in the second round, and how it was just really clear that I think teams were higher on him than the draft social media sphere.
The consensus big board?
Yeah, the consensus big board might be different than the NFL teams. Boards, but I think that's indicative of this entire draft. I'm guessing you could find, and this may be every year, we just don't hear about it as much. It feels like you could find 50 players in this draft that their grades by team varied by like three or four rounds. Like they that's just sort of how it felt. The nature of this draft was, but yeah, man, it doesn't. I think the issue that people had with the Stribling pick, and really this draft in general, is more a matter of the 49ers track record in taking swings like this or taking players like this who are not super high on the quote unquote consensus big board. But then when you look at his tape and you look at what he brings physically, and you hear already the Niners veterans are talking about how he's been really impressive in his willingness to block and do all the little things that a receiver needs to do to get on the field for Kyle Shanahan. It's like, I think he's going to get an opportunity to utilize his physical tools in a way that maybe Jacob Cowing or Danny Gray were not. And that makes me optimistic for a player like him.
Yeah. And we haven't seen Stribling on the field at all, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if Stribling ends up being the best young guy that the 49ers have right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the best under 25 guy. I think Stribling has a pretty clear opportunity to evolve into that guy based on what his college tape was, based on the situation he's in, based on Kyle Shanahan's ability to develop receivers.
Mm-hmm.
If Stribling became a Pro Bowl type guy that we're talking about, I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, at all.
Yeah, no, me neither. If you told me that he wound up being wide receiver two because Ricky Pearsall played seven games and he had eight touchdowns as a rookie, I wouldn't be shocked at all. I think he's a super, super talented player. Just as all things with Kyle Shanahan and rookies, it's like, is he going to be able to get on the field? That's my bigger concern than can he actually play football. It's just, is he going to do enough to actually play, or is DeMarcus Robinson going to get all those snaps? You know,
yeah,
that's the bigger question I have. I have two other things on this. One, I need to issue a correction of sorts. You and I both, and I think this underscores where this player stands in the pecking order for the 49ers, you and I both completely spaced on during our last podcast that Isaac Arendo has a torn pec and is probably not going to play this season, or certainly won't be ready for training camp.
Won't be ready for the start of training camp. The expectation, I think, is he'll be available at some point. I don't know if he'll make the team, but he'll be available at some point in August, potentially.
So this world where he tears it up in camp and becomes RB2 is probably not going to happen because he's dealing with this pectoral injury. Okay. So anyways, needed to clear that up because that's something that I had completely forgotten about.
So we're right. just yep. for maybe different
Great
reasons.
Great point. It would be very surprising for sure. That's what I'm not gonna say who it was, but somebody reached out to us, somebody who covers the 49ers. And they were like, I would be floored, stunned if Isaac Garendo tore it up in camp. I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, especially with that pec injury. It was like, oh, that's right.
It happened in April. Anyway. It wasn't reported until May, which
it's a tough scene for the injury guy that he couldn't get through April.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that was the thing with him coming out of college was all the injuries.
Yeah. Would he start one game in college?
Something like that. I know there. One start. Anytime Eric Branch does a story about a rookie and all of his injury concerns, there's a really good chance that it's not going to bode well. And that's exactly what happened with Isaac Garendo. I remember specifically Eric Branch writing the story.
That's why they call Eric Branch the Grim Reaper. Many are saying that. So anyways, I just wanted to I needed to clear that up. It's really been bothering me. So that's where that is. And I wanted to get that out of there. Okay. The other thing I want to talk about with young players and 49ers draft picks and the way they've drafted over the last 6 years or so. I'm interested to see how different it is once Trent Williams is gone and George Kittle is gone and Christian McCaffrey is gone and Nick Bosa is either gone or in his early 30s and Fred Warner gets into his early to mid 30s. I'm interested to see if the 49ers draft the same way or if we start seeing them lean more toward, for lack of a better word, the consensus. Because right now it feels like they draft for these really specific needs built around the star players they already have. And when those stars are gone, do they take different swings in search of stars?
I also think when those guys are gone, they're just going to be super active in trades.
Maybe. Yeah, that would make sense.
Like they're going to trade for other established veterans and just kind of reshape it that way. What I think sort of like a similar line of thinking or along those lines is like, what's Kyle Shanahan's tolerance going to be for rebuilding or like mm-hmm. building out a team through the draft versus like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Kyle Shanahan's been there since 2017. So this is what his ninth season is 10th.
10. This is year 10. Holy crap.
This is year 10 for Kyle Shanahan. So say they don't win a Super Bowl within the next year or two. And Trent Williams retires, and you know, obviously, you're at an inflection point with George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey. Fred Warner's probably still got a few years left at that point, still, assuming he stays healthy, knock on wood. But is Kyle Shanahan gonna be like, yeah, sure, let's take a couple years and rebuild this thing the right way?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe they trade off some veterans for draft picks. Is Kyle Shanahan going to have a tolerance for that? Or is Kyle Shanahan going to be like, nope, we're going to try to keep this window open as yeah. much as we can. And they treat things like a lot of Warriors fans think the Warriors fans should treat Steph Curry. Like, no, we have Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan's getting impatient. We got to go all in, trade these draft picks, let Shanahan cook with some veteran players.
What would be infuriating about that is that that's what they should have been doing for the last half decade.
The Niners?
Yes.
Or the Warriors?
Well, yes. Both. Like that's what they should have been doing. They had the stars, like go make the trades and give up the picks to get over the hump and get the guys that you need.
I don't know, but who's in this scenario, like who's the guy that they didn't get that they should have gotten?
Dude, that's a question that I would need to go back and look to answer. But you just see when guys like Myles Garrett move or guys like AJ Brown get moved or any major trade, the consistent refrain was like, well, you can't give up those picks. And I think at some point, like, yeah, no, you do give up the picks.
Sure.
And then you add a bunch of late round picks a la the Rams, and you throw a bunch of darts at the board and see if you can fill out your roster on the margins that way. And maybe you fall backwards into a Puka Nacua in the process. But I think if there was ever a time to start trading picks and trying to land stars, it's when you already have the stars in the building and you're trying to get over the hump instead of trying to manufacture a Super Bowl window by giving up your future picks.
Yeah, I guess I go back to like Trey Hendrickson, right? Like that. Could they have traded for Trey Hendrickson last year? Yeah. Would it have worked? Probably not.
Trey Hendrickson is not on that list for me.
Right. And even like people talked about Myles Garrett going to the Rams, and it's like, that's fine. The Rams sent back Jared Verse to Cleveland, who was way better and younger than any player the 49ers could have sent the Browns. So sure. I'm with you. I think overall,
there's the Matthew Stafford thing. There's the Jalen Ramsey. All these are just Rams trades. That's so funny. There's Matthew Stafford. There's Jalen Ramsey. I think there were opportunities there. And then other players who either didn't move, went to different teams, or maybe didn't ultimately get moved because the price wasn't there. It feels like they've been really precious about their draft picks, and it's netted them this group of players under 25 that we're talking about is like, maybe they've got a couple of starters here instead of, yeah, they've got X, Y, and Z star who's not in their mid 30s.
So my pushback would be, I think they've been pretty aggressive when it comes to trades. Like every year they've been contending, they've made a pretty
aggressive. They did go out and get Keon White. That's true.
No, every year they've been like real contenders. They've gone out and made pretty substantial trades, whether it was Manuel Sanders, Christian McCaffrey, they traded for Trent Williams. Like I think they've been a pretty aggressive team. I think really what ruined their ability to make this deal that you're talking about was whiffing on Trey Lance.
Yes, that's 100. That's it. Yeah.
Making that trade and it not working out and basically lighting all those picks on fire in what they could have traded for other players. I think that was ultimately their biggest downfall.
Yeah, I think so. And then whiffing on the 2021 and 2022 and 2023 drafts in the way they did, save for Brock Purdy, was also not super helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yikes.
Should we talk about lamb chops?
Boy, should we. Talk about not whiffing.
SGLambChops.com. They hit on all of their ideas.
What do they?
Lamb Chops is our favorite clothing brand, the official clothing brand of this very podcast. I'm wearing a pair of mesh Lamb Chops shorts as we speak. I think I wear Lamb Chops every day, one item or another, whether it's a shirt, whether it's shorts, whether it's sweatpants, whether it's hoodies. Just a lot of Lamb Chops gear is in the wardrobe. And make sure you go to sglambchops.com. Use promo code Candlestick20 to save 20% off of your order. Still waiting on these Dia de los Muertos shorts that are on the front of their website, which you could see on our YouTube channel right now. Also,
allegedly, they're en route.
Allegedly. Good sources have confirmed they are on the way. If you throw Candlestick into the search bar at sglambchops.com, you will find the Candlestick Chronicles merchandise. It is a t-shirt and matching hoodie. They are awesome. We highly recommend you guys go snag some to support the podcast and obviously to support Lamb Chops. Just going to make a lot of appearances over at Levi's Stadium this year. It's going to be great. So if you do cop a shirt and or a hoodie, tag Kyle on social media. He's at Kyle A. Madsen on X, the Everything app. Send him a picture of your gear.
And on Instagram. I'll repost it so fast. I'll repost it and say something nice about you.
Yeah, you will. So Lamb Chops, sglambchops.com. Lamb Chops, join the herd.
Yep. I was perusing the internet as I want to do, and I saw a thing about every team's non-quarterback MVP.
Okay.
And I wanted to talk about that idea in the scope of if a non-quarterback won MVP and they were on the 49ers, who would win it? Because I think there's a really obvious answer, right?
It's Christian McCaffrey.
Right, who's literally been top five in MVP voting in two of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah. At this point, what does the Christian McCaffrey MVP season look like? Does it just look like 2023, but he goes 1,000-1,000?
It's the Niners getting the one seed. It's 1,000-1,000.
I think that's a benchmark. Like, if he doesn't do 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving, I think it's a wrap. I don't think he gets it.
And I think it also probably has to be 25 touchdowns. Like, it's really, really hard. What do you have in?
I think you're right.
What did he have in 23?
21.
21 touchdowns. Like, the thing is it's so, like, I think offensive player of the year has made it really difficult for a non-quarterback to win MVP, because I think voters kind of look at, like, the narrative aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
and they say, well, you know, quarterbacks obviously inherently more valuable. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to give the MVP to the best quarterback on the best team. But to me, a Christian McCaffrey MVP season is like, Niners are the one seed. Brock Purdy has, like, not a great season. McCaffrey is very clearly carrying the team on his back. He mm-hmm. has 1,025 touchdowns. And yeah. I think that's incredibly unlikely to happen. Sure. I wouldn't rule it out entirely, but I think for Christian McCaffrey to win MVP, I think that's kind of what it would have to be.
That's what's funny is I think 2023 was like the year.
Yeah.
21 touchdowns. He was near 1,000-1,000. But the problem is he had a quarterback in Brock Purdy who was leading the league in touchdown rate at 7%, 31 touchdowns, 11 picks, led the league in yards per attempt at 9.6. 4,300 passing yards. Like, he was awesome. 69.4% completion rate. He was so good. And too good to say that Christian McCaffrey carried them.
Right.
Even though McCaffrey finished ahead of him in the MVP voting. It's like they divided each other's votes or split each other's votes.
Well, what killed Purdy's MVP candidacy was the Ravens game on Christmas.
That's right.
Where he had, what, 4 interceptions? And then Lamar Jackson win MVP, and he, like, balled out that game and murdered the Niners?
That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I think that's what happened.
I kind of think the Fred Warner angle is fun, because I think the idea of what a season would look like where a defensive player wins an MVP is obviously, like, impossible. Like, you painted the picture for Christian McCaffrey. The one for any defensive player, I'm going to use Fred Warner here, is like half the quarterbacks in the league get hurt. And the 49ers defense allows 12 points a game. And they, like, shut out Matthew Stafford and the Rams late in the season. And they win the division. And Fred Warner has, like, 6 sacks and 5 interceptions and a couple of big highlight, like, turnovers or takeaways. And he's just kind of the best player on. Oh, and Christian McCaffrey isn't great. And Brock Purdy's not great. And the Niners offense scores 20 points a game, but they win a bunch because Fred Warner leads the way on this awesome defense.
So but the even last. That,
even that's impossible, because there's going to be some quarterback that just that's on a one or two seed.
Do you know the last time a defensive player won an NFL MVP?
Was it like Lawrence Taylor?
Lawrence Taylor in 1986.
Jesus.
Do you know the last time a non-quarterback won MVP?
Yeah, Adrian Peterson, 2012?
Yeah.
Yeah. 2012, that's such a long-ass time.
It's turned into a quarterback award for sure.
Man.
But, I mean, any non quarterback's case for the 49ers, the Niners have to be the one seed.
Yep.
And like we said with Christian McCaffrey, it has to be very clear that, like, they rode him the whole way to the one seed. Like, he overcame Brock Purdy not being awesome
mm-hmm.
to get to the one seed. For Fred Warner to do it, it's got to be like Fred Warner has a ton of touchdowns, like defensive touchdowns.
Yeah, like 3 touchdowns.
and they have to come on like Sunday night or Monday night football, like nationally televised games late in the year, and the Niners have to win the one seed.
Yeah.
And the defense has to be like the best in the league.
By a lot.
By a lot.
Yeah, it can't be, oh, they're one of the best. Like, no, they gave up 12 points a game and the next closest team gave up 16.
It's got to be like, he's got to set some weird record. He's got to become like set some weird record. Like, this is the first linebacker with 10 sacks and 10 interceptions or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
there's got to be some weird statistical thing where it's like the only time anything like that has ever happened.
Yeah.
And like, I guess Fred could do that, but you know, I again wouldn't count on it.
Did you see he ranked 54th on the NFL top 100?
That's wild.
It's not 53 players in the league better at football than Fred Warner. Get the fuck out of here, please.
Those lists are so weird because like they're there's so, much of it. It's a lot of it's like recency bias.
And a lot of it is players kicking around.
Yes. Like players voting, like no offense to the vast majority of NFL players, but I'm not credibly asking them to rank things like in any capacity,
no,
in any walk of
no.
life. Like I'm cool with whatever you think about whatever subject.
Yeah, man. It's just, do you know, was it, who's the running back the Cardinals drafted? Jeremiah Love, is that his name?
Yeah.
Did you see that podcast interview he did where they were showing him old football players, but like of more recent vintage, and he just had no idea?
Like Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, I don't know if Adrian Peterson specifically, but it like took him a while to figure out who Calvin Johnson was. It just,
yeah, it's tough.
It's so crazy. I feel this is one of those things I feel like I've said on the podcast a million times, but I got to interview Matt Light one time, who was an offensive lineman for the Patriots in their heyday. And early in their heyday, I know their heyday was like two decades, but early in their heyday. And the lead of my story was a quote that he had where he said, the first time I watched an NFL game, I was playing in it. I was like, what? You never watched football? And he's like, no, it's just not a part of my life. That's crazy. But I think there's a lot of football players like that. They just don't consume the sport outside of what they watch on tape for right. practice or for not for practice, but for games.
It's a very humbling thing when you're getting to the point of like covering sports, and whether it's the NFL or NBA, you're like, oh, that guy was born like after I graduated high school.
Brother.
That is a very, very humbling experience. Like, I guarantee you nobody on the Niners roster has any clue what the 1994 team looks like. And that to me is like the most, that team like defined my interest in sports growing up was the 1994 Niners. And there's,
yeah, you're
no
relating
way
to Kyle
anybody,
Shanahan now.
What's that?
You're relating to like Kyle Shanahan and the coaching staff now more than the players.
Yeah, sure. Like, there's just no, like, Jerry Rice to these guys is just like some weird guy wearing a chain and a suit who comes to the games.
And he's God to most of us.
People of a certain generation, yeah.
Sure. He's God, hawking goat fuel.
Yeah.
Speaking of
anything else?
Are there any other MVPs? No. If Nick Bosa has 25 sacks. But even then, Myles Garrett wasn't even seriously considered. Granted, the Browns were ass.
Yeah. If Myles Garrett... Okay, so if Myles Garrett beats his record last year and the Rams are the one seed in the NFC, can he get... He'll get MVP votes.
Votes, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I have one more thing. Real quick, sure. Before we get out of here. I've wrote about this. Matt Maiocco talked a little bit about this as well on the 49ers Talk podcast. He's doing reporting. I'm opining. They're not bringing Deebo Samuel back. They're not signing Stephon Diggs. They're not signing Joey Bosa. That's just so not a 49ers thing to do, is sign a free agent on July 23rd. That's just not their bag, man. And yes, they have the cap space. It's not about money, though. They're just, what role does Debo play on the version of their roster they're hoping to get? What role does Stephon Diggs play on the version of the roster they're hoping to get? Like, they just don't. If they're gonna add a wide receiver, they would do it at the trade deadline because they need a wide receiver to get over the hump and become Super Bowl contenders.
So I'm with you in the sense that they're not going to do anything right now. But if Ricky Pearsall has a 6-week ankle injury late in August, couldn't you see Debo Samuel coming a couple weeks before the season starts?
Sure. Yeah, but right now, that's why I caveated that, if their roster goes the way they want it to go.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no role for him. So, yeah, if Ricky Pearsall says, oh, yeah, I got a hamstring, or Dejon Stribling quits football tomorrow, then sure, yeah, go add another receiver. Yeah. But right now, you're looking at your roster with the most optimistic eyeballs, and that's Mike Evans, Ricky Pearsall, wide receivers 1 and 2. Dejon Stribling, wide receiver 3, and they're not bringing in Stephon Diggs, and Stephon Diggs isn't signing to be wide receiver 4.
Right. So Stephon Diggs is only coming if he's one of your top two guys, and he's not playing any special teams.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And Debo Samuel, as good as he was at the 49ers and as special as he was with the 49ers, I think that ran its course. He doesn't, by the time he had left San Francisco, those orbit motions, and when he was going in motion, it wasn't warping defenses the way it was in the past. Right. And I'm trying to get Kyle Shanahan to get away from some of the stuff they've been leaning on for the last half decade and more into something a little more conventional, or whatever the next step of offensive evolution is. So I just don't, I don't think that any of that is realistic, no matter how fun it would be.
Yeah, I don't think any of it's happening right now. I just, we're inevitably going to see training camp injuries and injuries in August that is going to lead to something. Like, I don't know, maybe Mykel Williams has a setback, you know, knock on wood. Maybe Romello Height isn't going to be as productive as they hoped. Like, a scenario like that, I could see him signing Joey Bosa, like,
totally,
on Labor Day.
Yeah, I could, you see that, I mean? Once they know more about what they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But right, so now, they're not going to sign a guy to sign a guy.
No, they're not going to sign a guy without there being, like, they're not going to sign anybody or really trade for anybody unless they go into the season being like, we need a starter at receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously don't feel like they need that right now because they have their guys in place already.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like Tayshaun Gibson or trading for Brian Robinson, you know, there are a lot of minor deals that the team has made in late August or early September going into the season. Like, no, we just need a guy at this spot because whoever we needed to play that spot didn't step up and couldn't do it, or that player got hurt and then they had to make sort of an emergency addition. And that's the bucket I'm putting Debo Samuel and Joey Bosa into.
Yeah.
And maybe Stephon Diggs. I just, all the off the field stuff.
He's also really good.
Yeah,
1,000 yards last year.
I just have a hard time envisioning that.
Totally. Sure. Yeah, that's
like, unless something were to happen to Mike Evans before the season started.
Sure. Yeah.
To me, yeah. I don't know.
They're going to lean on their guys. They're going to lean on the guys they already brought in.
Yeah. Anyway. Is Brandon Ayuk going to petition the league for reinstatement?
No, because I think that's the kind of thing an agent would do for you, and apparently he doesn't have one.
Does he know that he needs to do that?
Yes, but I don't know that he understands it, because when he brought it up in whatever Instagram video it was, he's like, I'm not doing that because I'm not doing any business with them. Like, so your career's just over because you don't want to apply for reinstatement?
When you have a warrant out for your arrest and it's written about by ESPN and the Associated Press and every other gigantic outlet you could think of, and you have to go on social media to ask people if there's a warrant out for your arrest, you're probably not doing any of this correctly. And there's a really good chance that having an agent, many of whom have law degrees, are super beneficial in instances like this.
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
Theoretically. So.
Yep.
It's a tough scene.
Extremely. I feel for the guy.
I do too. I hope he's okay. I just.
Me too. I don't think he's reporting. I don't think he's applying for reinstatement. I think he's done.
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard to play for the Commanders if that's the case.
It'd be hard to play for the Commanders if they don't want to sign him.
Also true.
All right. I have to go to a meeting.
Okay. Subscribe, rate, and review. Check out our YouTube channel at Candlestick Chronicles Podcast on YouTube. Appreciate everyone at Odyssey and Lamb Chops. We'll talk to you guys later. See ya.
That's our show for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Candlestick Chronicles is produced and edited by Mike Robbier. If you're not already doing so, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@Candlestick Chronicles Podcast. Candlestick Chronicles is an Odyssey production.